He couldn't hide the scars, try as he might beneath that kerchief. No, that ain't what you meant. And you didn't see his scalp neither, now that I think on it. It fell off during the race. The same race I watched where it didn't? Try again. It must have been during the Tavolato. Oates shook his head. He was careful with that kerchief. Didn't even take it off to bathe. Realization made him bare his teeth. Who fucking told you? Calm yourself, Barasa said, holding up a wary hand. It was the prince's man. Lucas, Oates snarled. I was merely curious about Sevastian. He looked so changed. The Lots aren't known as a land of largesse. It was strange to see him softer in the middle than when he left. When I learned he'd been made a eunuch, I felt nothing but pity. I wouldn't wish that upon him, no matter what transpired between us. I don't relish that he is dead. I'll risk your anger to admit it pains me to hear it. You knew, Oates said, teeth grinding. You knew, and yet still you conspired to peddle his fucking flesh? Barasa hesitated. The Baron has strange tastes. Oates took a step forward. Hog shit. Barasa held his ground. I only wanted a small redress, a dose of retribution. I didn't know he would take his own life. How could I? How could you? Oates repeated. Harm me, and he won't be the only mongrel to die here, Barasa said, calm in his certainty. The truth of it brought Oates to a halt. Her Majesty's Master of Victlers, unarmed, murdered by the thrice-blood bastard in a rage. It was everything Alamra had cautioned them against. Oates took a breath and backed off. With a gloating grin, Barasa nodded. He moved to leave, but paused next to Oates. Paula is stabled at the prince's house? He asked. Swallowing, Oates nodded. Good. I'll send a servant to fetch him. Barasa's head snapped to the side, flinging bloody spittle over Oates's fist. Like the jouster from Anvil, Oates knew the man was dead before he hit the ground. He stood, staring down at the crumpled form, unable to move. The serving boy returned to the pavilion, and the basket of peaches tumbled from his grasp. Chapter 36. Oates stood chained next to the lake in the middle of the queen's fool-ass forest, guarded by no fewer than 60 men-at-arms. He was certain of the number. He'd counted them several times now. He hadn't considered fleeing. There'd been time when the boy ran off, raising a cry. Oates could have made it to the paddock, to Ugg, but that would only have dragged Thresh and culprit into the shit. They'd have insisted on riding with him. It wouldn't have been right. So, he'd stood firm, as he stood now. He was fortunate the cavaleros who came rushing into the pavilion hadn't slain him on the spot. Perhaps if they'd found him with a sword in his hand, rather than a half-eaten peach. It was something Jackal might have done, chewing on that fruit. But Oates wasn't trying to be cocky. He wasn't celebrating killing Barasa, though the fucker deserved it. He simply, suddenly, wanted to taste something good, to find a grain of pleasure in the barren desert he'd blinked to find himself wandering. Anselmo Volador had arrived to the pavilion not long after the cavaleros. In his quivering voice, the man actually asked if Oates would allow himself to be chained. A cautious question, and, Oates had to admit, a wise one. To Volador's visible relief, Oates held his wrists out. He hadn't expected to be taken to the wood, but the path his guards took there, behind the pavilions and the queen's terrace, revealed the reason. It was close, out of sight, giving the queen a place to render judgment without alerting the commoners that anything was amiss. The court, however, was gifted with fresh entertainment. The nobles gathered around, listening in hungry silence as the serving boy told Ursaria what he saw. Oates kept his eyes on Alamra, her presence providing him a mixture of relief and shame. He hadn't seen the rest of the hoof. Likely they were barred from entering. The wood had been empty when Oates got there, so he'd no notion if Polecat had caught wind of what happened. If he had, the others would know by now. Hells. Oates hoped they knew better than to try a rescue. The half-orc is to die! The Queen's proclamation fell with the same swiftness, the same lack of thought or feeling Oates had used to kill Barasa. He reckoned there was some poetry to that. But the judgment had come quicker than he expected. He hadn't even been asked to speak for himself.
Your Majesty, I would beg mercy, Alamra said.
She didn't grovel, but the soft plea within her face and voice was earnest. The nobles stirred with aggravated murmurs.
I cannot grant it, Ursaria said. The base and dishonorable slaying of a member of my court will not be suffered. Majesty, Alamra said, quieter,
but Oates was close enough to hear.
Among our hoof, we call each other brother and sister. Yet Oates shares a true sibling's bond with our chief. Theirs is a companionship from birth. His execution here will end all hope of peace. I must risk your Majesty's displeasure out of duty when I assure you, both our lands will bleed and burn should you do this. Fetching's thirst for vengeance will be unquenchable.
Ursaria's face went cold, even as her eyes began to burn. She fixed Alamra with that conflicted fury, but mastered herself after a heartbeat. She turned to Crafty and voiced a steady question.
And would the Tyrkanian Empire feel compelled to support the Mongrels' war, knowing it was a Mongrel's mindless savagery that broke the peace?
Crafty sighed, and damn him if his distress wasn't as earnest as Alamra's. He considered a moment.
No, righteous queen, he replied at last. The sultans value honor above all. If Dread Fetching cannot accept the just sentence brought down upon her rider for his red-handed deed, she will pursue any retribution without the Empire. Retribution?
Ursaria said, her voice nettled.
Rebellion, surely, is what you mean?
As you say, Crafty said, with a bow. Queen Ursaria looked to Oates, stone-faced, and gathered a breath.
However, Crafty said, taking a half-step toward the queen, I fear I would be remiss if I did not attempt to lessen the bloodshed. May I, patient queen, offer a cautery?
Ursaria swallowed a rising vexation.
Speak.
Crafty spread his hands.
A murder demands execution. Yet the gallows, the headsman's scaffold, they are docile methods. Perhaps Her Majesty can seize the chance to end this festival with an amusement to rival all. One that will see justice done, but assuage the warlord Fetching's pride. You see, the mongrel hoofs hold dear a certain oath.
The words came boiling from Oates's gut.
Live in the saddle, die on the hog.
He held Alamra's eyes as he said them. It was a plea of his own. Her face was softened by sorrow as she gave him the barest nod.
Allow Oates to fulfill it, and he meets the deserved punishment, Your Majesty,
Crafty said.
Your tourney field stands perfectly prepared. A mounted duel,
the queen mused, and Oates realized she was weighing the response of her court. He did not turn, but could feel the flutters of their enthusiasm.
And should he prove victorious?
The queen challenged Crafty. The wizard unveiled his smile.
Wise queen, there is nothing to dictate the contest be something he can win.
It was Polecat who brought Ugfuck to the marshalling field behind the queen's terrace, eyeing the guards with crossbows as he came.
We drew straws,
the hatchet-faced mongrel said when he reached Oats. Thresh won, but I told her I wanted to come.
I owe you some coin I don't recall? Oats asked.
Polecat did not so much as smile. His pained stare was held captive by Oats's chains.
This ain't right, he whispered.
It's as wrong as I've made it, Cat.
Give the word, Polecat said in Orcish, and we'll come.
None of that thick speak, one of the guards growled. You've brought the pig, now get you gone.
Polecat gave the man a shit-eye, but bit back any reply. He turned to Oats.
Brother, we...
Get gone, sootskin!
The guard stepped and shoved Polecat. The mongrel's eyes ignited, but Oats caught them, returned a hard stare of his own, and shook his head. Polecat plodded backward a few steps, bullied by the guards.
I ain't gonna wish you luck,
Polecat called over the men hurrying him along.
I wish it to these frails. They don't know who you are. You're the big bastard, champion of the Pit of Homage. Orcs, giants, centaurs, you put them all in the ground. You're a bastard, gray and true. You're fucking Oats, and we will see you again, brother. We will see you again.
Oats stood beside Ugfuck and did not look away until Cat was out of sight. Wanting no interference, the queen had forbidden the hoof from viewing what was to come. Only Alamra was permitted. She was already sat up near the queen. He'd told her to make certain the others did not rile at the queen's order, and also to send Guiamar back to the city with Lucas. The girl should not be forced to witness any more horrors on the bastard's account. Manrique had no desire to be present, but the queen insisted. Before they parted, Oats made a final request to Alamra. No reprisals, and no sending word to fetch. He didn't know how possible peace with Hisparta was, and any chance had certainly been hobbled by his stupidity, but he wanted to give Alamra time to mend what he'd broken. Time she wouldn't get if the chief came. Queer to think he wouldn't be here to see whatever happened. He wondered if Warbler would do what he asked, what Alamra swore to tell him. The old thrice had left the hoof twice before, unwillingly the first time, of his own notion the second. Would he leave a third? Shed the brigand and look after Beryl, take her back to Dogfall with Wiley and find her lost happiness? Would he honor the final wish of a son? Again, Oats would be gone. He'd never know. Perhaps it should have angered him, but he was too damn tired.
Wish they'd hurry this along, he told Ugfuck.
For all the lush beauty of the stepped terrace from the front, the back was nothing but a high slope of dirt, shored up with wooden framing. Standing in its shadow, Oats could see the backs of the queen's bulls just beyond the upper railing. The blare of unseen trumpets rose from the other side. Silence followed, but soon Oats caught the weakest slivers of a man's raised voice. A herald, he knew, proclaiming to the commoners what they were about to see. Oats didn't need to hear the words to know what was said. A mongrel. A murderer. A monster from Ulwundulas, that untamed land from which rebellious half-orcs cast ravenous and jealous eyes northward, intent on slaughter and rape. Good Queen Ursaria was now to prove such creatures were not to be feared, to show her people they could be vanquished. Ugfuck jerked a little when the terrace erupted with cheers. Whoever stood for the queen must have taken the field.
Easy, Oats told Ug, placing the heels of his bound hands on the hog's withers.
As the cries intensified, his chains were removed, and the guards commanded him to the field's northern entrance, a gap between the terrace and the prince's wood. The crossbowmen aimed their weapons and warned what would happen if Oats tried to run. He'd no intention of running. He didn't even mount, but walked Ug to the gap. What he saw down the length of the field made him grunt. Crafty had been right. It wasn't a contest he could win. Six cavaleros in full armor sat barded stallions, lances pointing skyward. And it wasn't the demi-lances, steel caps, and scale coats of the cavaleros Oates was used to fighting in the lots, but plate harness, full helms, and heavy war lances. Even with a thrum, a full quiver, and a brace of javelins, he would have stood little chance. One of the guards handed him his tulwar. "Ride out," the man said. Oates didn't climb into the saddle. He stepped around in front of Ugfuck instead and knuckled him between the eyes. "There ain't no oath worth you dying to," he said. "Not when you don't need to." Ugfuck grunted and butted Oates in the cods with his snout. "No, you're staying here. When you get back home, Anvil will need you. You look after her now." Ugg complained again. Oates leaned down and placed his forehead on the broad, flat expanse of the hog's skull. "You ain't paying for my mistake, you beautiful, ugly fuck." The mouthy guard lost patience.
"Mount up and ride out."
"I'm walking out," Oates told him, straightening. "There's eight of you. More than enough to kill me with them thrums, but one volley ain't gonna drop this hog, which means he'll get mad. You'll all die uglier than him before you can reload. So leave him be and live. And let me go to the hells the way I want."
Oates gave Ugfuck the sign to stay and strode out onto the field. The ugly noises from the crowd brought him back to his first fight in the pit. They'd hated him then, too. That changed after a few victories. The sickness he'd felt in his guts never did. Still, he was grateful to Crafty, sparing him the impotence of a death on the gallows, hands tied behind his back while some fucker put a noose around his neck. He would die today, but he didn't know which of the men before him would land the blow. He wouldn't endure that torturous trickle of collapsing time before the end, that evil wait before the drop. Sparing Ugg had cost him the bastard's oath, but there was another he could fulfill. The words of the fangs of our fathers. "Live in the battle, die in a fury." All fatigue fled Oates as he started running, fed by that building fury. The cavaleros hesitated. They'd expected him to be a hog. Ugg would have been his only real weapon in this fight, and now he charged on foot, slower, smaller. It wouldn't take six horsemen to deal with him now. Oates sprinted on, desperate to rob them of the chance to declare he must be mounted to keep Ugg from being condemned. He saw the heralds skirt the edge of the field, riding for the front of the terrace. If the queen decreed this was not the contest she desired, Oates changed direction, darting left toward the herald. Toward the court. Let them think he intended to leap into the midst of the nobles. Five of the cavaleros spurred their mounts to cut an angled course across the width of the field. They would reach the terrace ahead of Oates to place themselves between him and their precious blue bloods. Didn't matter. They'd taken the bait. The remaining rider came straight for Oates, lowering his lance. Good. The battle would be joined, and there would be no stopping it. Oates again changed direction to meet the lone cavalero. The size of the man, his horse, that cobalt armor, that red hand painted on the shield. It was Duke Ernan. He'd admitted to being eager to lead the war against the lots. Perhaps Oates could deprive him the chance before he went to the dust. Hoping Manrique wasn't watching, and silently asking for his forgiveness if he was, Oates flung his tulwar overhand at the horse's face. The spinning blade smote the plate strapped to the animal's forehead. Metal rang against metal, melded with the horse's scream as it reared. Oates kept coming, ducking beneath the kicking forelegs on the run. His neck, shoulders, and palms slapped the belly of the beast. He'd never met such a weight. But he wagered the Duke had never met a fucking thrice-blood. Screaming, straightening with all the power his legs contained, pushing with every grain of grit he possessed, Oates lifted the horse higher into the air. Its piercing shrieks reached their peak as Oates felt the tipping point. The horse toppled backward with a brutal clamor, but the Duke was not crushed beneath. He must have leapt clear, for Oates caught a glimpse of his armored bulk lying in the grass. There wasn't time to finish him. The other cavaleros were coming. Oates dove for Hernan's fallen lance, snatched it up, and planted its butt in the dirt, lifting the killing end without a moment to spare. In his haste to reach the Duke, the lead rider charged full into the set lance. Oates grunted against the impact as the steel point and an arm's length of wooden shaft sank into the horse's chest. The lance began to bend as the doomed animal screamed and threw its rider. A cavalero tried to bull through the gap between the lanced horse and the Duke's fallen steed, but his mount shied at the mouth of all that kicking and screaming. The remaining three came hard around the other side, lances lowered. Releasing the lance, Oates hunched and shouldered through the gap toward the stalled cavalero. He was buffeted by the flailing hooves of the dying horse and battered by the flank of the Duke's as it lurched upright in a panic. He reeled against the blows, struggling to keep his balance as he came to grips with the lone cavalero. The man was still wrestling with his mount. His charge arrested, his lance was useless, and he let it fall, trying to draw a sword as Oates reached and tore him from the saddle. Oates tried to mount, but the damned horse balked, pivoting away. He held firm to the saddle horn, using the animal's body to shield him from the other three cavaleros still a horse. Only, there was just the one. Oates snatched a glance to his left, found the other two had broken off to ride away from the tangle, and were now wheeling to come at him from the side. In trying to find an easier path to kill him, they saved his life, for Oates's eye fell upon Duke Hernan rushing him on foot, sword raised. Fuck him. Abandoning the disagreeable stallion, Oates ran to meet the Duke barehanded. The man was big. He'd nearly the same reach Oates had, even without a blade. But that was reach with an arm. Oates turned his run into a leap, twisting to kick the oncoming Duke with both feet. His boots hit a mass of man and metal, knocking them both to the earth. Oates was up first, cast a look around. Behind, a cavalero coming on foot, another trying to calm and remount his horse, the third spurring his horse. To his right, the pair of flanking horsemen had thrown down their lances in favor of sword and mace, and were now coming at a cautious pace, no doubt fearing to trample the Duke, who was picking himself up, breath echoing hotly inside his closed helm. The rider behind had no such qualms, and came with lance lowered at full tilt. Oates grabbed Hernan before the Duke had found his footing and slung him at the hot-foot cavalero. The man dropped his lance to spare his lord a skewering and pulled his horse hard to the side, but the Duke was still struck by the barrel of the animal and slammed to the ground once more. Oates scrambled for the fallen lance and, taking it two-handed, whirled the great length of wood and metal over his head, turning in place as he forced the weapon into rushing revolutions. He caught the dismounted cavalero with a blow to the head before coming around to fend off the pair of riders. They reined up hard to avoid the flying shaft. Hernan crawled away, fleeing the perilous whirlwind Oates wove. The cavalero whose lance Oates now wielded risked coming within reach. Sick of men on horses, Oates whipped the lance into the legs of his mount and heard the crack of bone. The screaming animal toppled, taking its rider down. The metal head and a span of wood had snapped off too, but there was more than enough lance left for Oates to heave crosswise over his head at the two dithering cavaleros. Both ducked behind their shields. Oates used the chance to spring at them, darting between their horses to seize a leg on each man. Jerking his arms upward, he sent them tumbling from their saddles as he continued to run, spinning to swat both horses on the rump. The animals bolted. One cavalero fell clean. The other's foot caught in a stirrup. He was dragged away at a gallop, his armor-clad body jolting against the ground. Oates stamped to a halt, spun about, and snatched a mace from the grass, moved to bash the fallen man's head in. No time. The last rider was bearing down on him. Oates dove out of the horse's path, but the cavalero caught him with a slash to the shoulder blade. His brigand took some of the bite, but he was cut. The crowd must have known, too, for he was suddenly aware of its conjoined voice once more. Until now it hadn't gone their way, though Oates had only killed one horse, maimed a second, and sent the dukes fleeing. One cavalero was pinned beneath his mount, another was dragged off by his, but none were dead. Not yet. Hernán was moving on him again, an unhorsed cavalero accompanying him on his left. They both held swords, but only the duke retained a shield. Not even his own, Oates noticed, from the colors. So, the other man had handed it over. Oates grunted. These fucks had been tasked to kill him, but if Hernán was the cunt Oates suspected, the duke wanted to be the one to do it, which meant the others were more focused on keeping their lord alive. Oates could use that. The cavalero he'd dumped from the saddle had risen, but must have injured his sword arm in the fall, for he was shuffling backward to join the duke with nothing but a shield. The three men formed up. Oates couldn't see their faces through their helms, but their postures betrayed they looked beyond him to the last cavalero still a horse. Oates glanced back. The horseman was a javelin's throw away, waiting, giving the duke and his companions a chance to gather themselves. Fuck them and their need for a respite. Oates took a step forward, and his boot touched something hard. It was his tulwar. Luck and his own weapon, he could use those too. Switching the mace to his left hand, he took up the slicer and proceeded toward the duke. The man with only a shield was now to Hernán's right. They were all clad in strong armor and outnumbered their opponent, but if Oates knew anything, it was that warriors with no weapon felt naked no matter how well girded, no matter how many friends were beside them on the field. He charged, straight at the man with just the shield. He was supposed to protect his duke, but did he trust his duke to protect him against a rushing, bellowing thrice? Shield boy faltered, taking a pair of retreating steps, leaving Hernán's right side exposed. Reckon not. Oates sent his tulwar to fend the duke's cut and hammered the mace into the shield-bearer, encouraging him to commit to his retreat. The force of the blow sent the man sprawling. Oates whirled full upon the duke, coming around with the mace. Hernán leaned into the stroke, blunting it with his weight behind his shield. Oates cut at his shoulder, but the edge of the tulwar only knocked against the metal plate. Sword boy stepped around and lunged. Oates leaned away and swatted at the incoming blade with his own, turning it aside. The duke barreled forward, slamming with his shield. He might have been accustomed to knocking smaller men down, but Oates wasn't smaller. And he weren't no fucking man. He pillared himself with a back-flung leg, encircled the duke in a crushing embrace, and threw him into Sword Boy, giving Hernán the satisfaction of knocking a lighter frail down. The duke kept his feet, sent a warding slash at Oates to prevent him from pressing. Oates pressed anyway, parrying the cut with his tulwar, countering with the mace to strike the duke's damned shield. The next instant, the fucker had two, Shield Boy returning to his lord's side. Oates ignored him, knowing Hernán's blade was the true foe, the one that had demanded the right to spill his blood, take his life. He chopped and hammered, driving forward, pushing both men back. Had they been men of meat and not metal, each would have died a dozen times, but their armor withstood every stroke of his blade, their shields turning every fall of the mace into a hand-numbing shock of futile effort. His shortened fingers turned the heavy weapon into a torture, the haft yearning to jump from his grasp. Teeth grit against an assault of pained panting, Oates cursed all weakness to the hells, delving deep into the grit that formed him, knowing that when it was exhausted, so too would he be, and then he would die. He fought, he strove, he grunted, growled, and spat at the men before him, at the black pit rising to claim his strength. Oates reached the bottom, but what awaited him there wasn't death. He found the orc. It laughed, throaty and savage. Hating all that he was not, Oates damned the orc as he set it free. Caged since the night he butchered Lucan, trapped in the memory of the brothel cellar, it emerged, ravenous and enraged. It killed Shield Boy first, chopping down upon his helm with such savagery it broke his skull and the tulwar's blade. The third man had joined the fight. Oates couldn't say when. He'd seen only red before the black. The orc flung the broken hilt at him, the mace fast behind at the end of a bulging arm. The frail's parry was too slow, too weak. The mace crumpled his gauntlet, the sword fell from his hand. The next instant, the face of his helm was caved in, the flanges of the mace screeching as they burrowed into the steel. The orc took a cut across the thigh. Ernan, acting too late to save his man. The wound was deep. The wound was nothing. Pain was the song of slaughter. The orc struck again, buckling the duke's shield, sending the mace spinning from its grip. More pain, the sword piercing the orc's gut low to the side. It stepped forward as the frail withdrew for another thrust and took hold of his shield in both hands, tearing it from his grasp. Disdaining the strength of steel, the orc struck the duke with its bare fists. Flesh and bone resounded against metal. Once. Twice. Thrice. The orc heard hoofbeats and spun, sidestepping to seize the rider's descending arm and tear him from the pitiful animal's back. Wrenching the arm aloft behind the screaming frail's back, the orc stomped upon his spine until the shoulder broke. The pummeled duke had lost his sword, but not his feet. He waded forward on unsteady limbs, a long spike of a dagger in his fist. The orc caught the man's wrist, took the weapon from him as if he were a child, and rammed it into his head. The spike burst through metal, bone, and brain, burying to the disc of the guard. Using the handle of the dagger, the orc twisted the duke's head around until the neck bones offered no more resistance. The orc let the limp carcass flop to the grass and basked in the whimpering of the frail with the broken shoulder. His moist mewling was swallowed by the seething mob of onlookers, threatening to crack the sky with their adulation. No. The orc now saw it was not for its victory they cheered. It was for the 10 fresh cavaleros entering the field. Oates fell to his knees. His legs were gone. So was Ernan. He'd done that, at least. Perhaps it would matter. The cavaleros did not hurry. They fanned out as they came, forming a crescent in front of him. Oates reckoned they'd send one man galloping forward to test him, see if he had any fight left. He didn't. He wouldn't budge. The elected rider would find him an easy target for the lance. It'd be quick as long as the man had any skill. Still, Oates wished they'd just sent the crossbowman, but he reckoned that would stain the honor of the Blue Bloods. Heap of hog shit. Oates tried not to, but the weight got the better of him, and he looked to the terrace. Alamra was there, at the top. As if waiting for his gaze to find her, she stood, her small, distant figure a calm comfort above the exulting nobles. Less than a spit away from Oates, the man with the broken shoulder had gone quiet and unmoving. Whether he'd passed out or died, Oates couldn't say. The horsemen stood spread across half the field. Each looked to the queen. Oates closed his eyes. He didn't want to see her give the signal, didn't want to be tempted to make another stand. He wanted this over, an end to the pain, to the anger, to the regret, to the fruitless yearning to survive. The howling of the peasantry reached a new height. Oates felt his heart race, his guts sour. Hells, the time had come. He felt a sudden, foolish hope that his brethren would remember him. Oates opened his eyes, but none of the riders were moving. The commoners and the nobles were no longer looking at him as they gestured and gawked down the field. Oates craned around to look behind. No. Ugfuck was coming. Oates shook his head, despair giving him the strength to stand. No! The crowd began to roar with alarm and outrage and elation. No! Oates cried. Ugg, no! Go back! He stumbled forward a single step as the hog sped toward him. The cavaleros on both ends of the crescent spurred their mounts. They weren't coming for Oates. No! Oates threw his arms up and fell once more to his knees. I won't fight!
Go back! I don't want him! Please, I'm here! Kill me! Don't!
The cavaleros knew not to charge a barbarian from the front. They swept in from the flanks. Ugfuk came undeterred for Oats. The lance is lowered.
Ugh!
The first slammed in from the right, taking Ugg in the flank. The hog screamed, half spun by the impact. Legs churning, he tried to keep coming, but the second lance struck from the other side, plunging into his shoulder, forcing him to the ground. His squeals were hideous agony. They filled Oats's ears, hollowed his heart. His own screams erupted to scour his throat, melding with the sound of Ugfuck's pain, unable to drown it. Oats plummeted into the blackness of the pit once more. There was no bottom for the orc to lair, only a deepening chasm, rotten with grief. It was the festering wound Thun had seen within him, where his heart should be. Oats had denied its existence. How could he be heartless when he held so much there? Yet the giant had seen true with his lone eye. Oats had fought his heart full, but it was only an abandoned storehouse stacked with doomed affections. His hoof, scraped away by war, now thin as old leather and destined to snap. His mother, broken by sorrow. Jackal, fetching. The faces of friends now little more than masks worn by the champions of gods and sorcery. Zhrika, gone and hidden with no desire to be found. Thistle and Murrow, offers of love he would be selfish to accept. Ugfuck, dying before his eyes, murdered by his Spartha. The Frail's hatred would take it all in the end. In death, Oats would have been spared the sight, tricked himself with a vain, false hope that it might be different in a world he would never know. Ugg's cries ripped the wound wide. Oats let everything he loved slide into that inevitable gulf and, using his anger as a torch, set a fire to what was left clinging to the sticky, ragged edges. He burned away all that he feared to lose with the rage born of certainty that all was already lost. And there, in the blackened, gutted cavity left behind, he felt a distant pulse, a heartbeat not his own. It was small, weak, needlessly smothered by a burden that belonged to Oats. He should never have allowed another to bear it, this curse, the Claymaster's legacy. It had been created here, in his Spartha, forced upon the half-orcs. It was time it was returned. Oats rose from his knees, flooding with fluid. These frails had wanted his life. They should have taken it, but they had robbed him of far more. Always they wanted more. Had they but been content with slaying him? His flesh flushed with fever, bubbled with sores. The tiny heartbeat strengthened as his own breathing became labored, crackling in his lungs. He would meet his end today, but his grave would be filled to bursting with those he took with him to the hells. The queen had at last forced a hoof rider to kneel. She would suffer for not leaving him there. Somewhere, far away, a little thrice-blood boy was freed from the grip of horrid magic. It was the last good act Oats could perform, though it was much, much too late. Ursaria had thought to show her people justice done to a murdering, ash-colored mongrel. It was time she saw there were worse things than a bastard, a thrice-blood, an orc. Offering Wily a silent pardon for taking so long, Oats showed these pitiless frails the face of the true plague-bearer. Chapter 37. The men who lanced Ugg were the first to die. Tendrils of the plague lashed out from Oats, snakes of living vapor that engulfed the cavaleros, pouring into the slits of their helms. They fell from panicked and blistering horses to cough and writhe upon the ground, clawing at their armored faces. One managed to cast his helm off and granted Oates a look at his frothing lips and pustule-ridden face. It would be a slow, agonizing death. The man would be terrified to his last thin breath. The tourney field was surrounded by teeming waters of humanity. The commoners were shouting, those at the fence trying to flee, but hampered by the rooted confusion of their fellows behind them. Oates turned his back on them and limped toward the queen's terrace. The nobles had risen with alarm, but none were attempting to run. Well-trained hounds, they waited for their precious monarch to descend the steps, surrounded by her guard. The matron's spear held Ursaria's hand as they hurried down, followed by Manrique, Crafty, and Fuctus. They were led and trailed by the queen's bulls. One of the cavaleros had Alamra by the arm, dragging her along, unhindered by her struggles. Oates felt the rumble of hoofbeats and glanced down the field to see the remaining cavaleros coming. He need not run. He need not fight. Their charge was met by a thickening fog of sorcery. They came undaunted, courageous, and dutiful, and paid the price. The horses that reached Oates galloped past him wearing empty saddles, blood streaming from their nostrils. Their riders were nothing but phantoms of agonized choking rising from the depths of the noxious cloud. With ponderous steps, Oates proceeded on. It wasn't only the gash in his leg that slowed him. His joints were swollen, his back stiffened. Each plod forward sent a gurgling exhalation crawling past his lips. His body was a heavy, ungainly mass, struggling within the eye of the plague, its beleaguered and straining heart. The magic flowed from him and through him. He suffered its corrosive caress, racked by chills, even as the dreadful spell boiled at his core, expelling fat drops of sweat and weeping pustules. He'd forgotten the pain of this foul shit, for he'd held it only briefly before he was rescued by Jackal and the mercy of unconsciousness. He despaired that Wiley had ever had to live a single day in such torment. The Claymaster had endured it for decades. Oates needed only a few more moments. The plague flooded the terrace long before he arrived. His every step brought it closer, yet it blossomed with the violent beating inside his constricted chest, growing as it consumed. The courageous resolve the court displayed while ensuring the queen's safety was now broken. They fell over one another in their rush to escape, several of the men shoving their wives out of the way in their dash to escape the cloud's grip. It was too late. They were spitting bile. Oates stooped beneath the rail separating the terrace from the field, mouth dribbling some vile ichor as he bent. Straightening on the other side, he paused to cast rheumy eyes over the convulsing forms of Ursaria's court, their silk and brocade-clad bodies lying in pools of bloody vomit on every level of the terrace. Housed in a thrice blood, Crafty claimed the plague was now more deadly to orcs than frails. Still, it was a fucking plague. The court would be a long time dying. At his feet, Oates recognized the silver hair of Zana, fouled and dangling from the crawling woman's head. She retched and collapsed, rolling to her back to stare up at him with yellow, feverish eyes. Dimly, Oates recalled she'd been kind to him. He stepped over her and trudged on. He cared only for the prince's wood, where the queen had fled. The crossbowman who'd ushered him to the tourney field made a stand, but the plague preceded Oates by a javelin's toss now, and their volley was rushed. They loosed their bolts into the occluding cloud, none hitting their mark, and tried to flee before the magic reached them. They weren't swift enough. No others opposed him. His onerous gait brought him to the forest path, and, at last, to the lake. Across the water, Ursaria stood resolute beside Ingrazia Bracara, screened by the order of the Minotaur. The six cavaleros held their poleaxes ready, the steel-wrought bull faces of their helms offering Oates mute and dispassionate challenge. Crafty, too, waited beyond their armored cordon, flanked by Fuktus. The Javadi held his axe in one hand and the back of Manrique's neck with the other. Oates paused, seeing the restrained and quailing prince. Alamra was next to them. None had a hand upon her, but apprehension was writ in her rigid posture. The plague cloud pushed forward, though Oates was now still, its edge lapping over the opposite bank. He drew it back, finding a control he had not cared to impose against the court. The vapors were subsumed into his body as he made his way around the shoreline.
"I trust you do not think this makes you the victor," Queen Ursaria declared.
"Shouldn't have killed my hog," Oates said, his voice a morass of hatred forced out by a tongue now tumid and sore-ridden.
"Such a faithful creature," Ursaria said to Crafty, amused. "You owe it immense gratitude, Uhad. The tourney was unending. I feared my frivolous court would grow weary of the entertainments. I began to doubt you could deliver on your promise."
Crafty spread his hands.
"For all my talents, forbearing queen, I cannot see the future. I could swear only to the assurance of the plague's return, not the timing."
"I almost insisted you reveal which of them was the bearer," Ursaria chided.
"I was certain it was either the ghastly white male or that female with the unbearable scars. Never the thrice blood."
She eyed Oates up and down.
"He appeared so very hale. It's almost a pity I cannot reward you, Oates, but the slayer of Hisparth's court cannot be given land and title, even if he were not a vicious sootskin. I'll grant you a quick death when the time comes. You deserve that for giving me the joy of seeing that lout Ernan's head turned around on his brutish neck alone, to say nothing of all the other schemers and suitors. I do hope that rancid old dowager Sabedra didn't escape you."
"None of them escaped," Oates replied, guilt threatening to crush him as he thought of Zana. No doubt he'd slain a pile of evil fucks, but not all had deserved such a terrible end. Perhaps not even most, but there were a few more who truly did. He swept the conspirators with a promise. "Neither will you."
"Neither will your bastards," Ursaria said. "I had them put under heavy guard before you took the field. They are being taken to the Madrasta even now. What do you suppose their fate will be if you harm me?"
"She will hang us no matter what you do, Oates," Alamra said, her voice taut. "We are now—"
"The mongrels that tried to murder her," Oates said. "I see it. Got rid of all them fucks she didn't want to marry in the doing. More than a few rivals of different stripes, too, I reckon. And Crafty helped her. Tourney was just to get them all together. I ain't stupid. Or fucking surprised."
He wasn't worried for his brethren, either. There wasn't a prison that could hold Hoodwink, if he allowed himself to be taken there at all. He'd get the others free, or die trying. Nothing Oates could do to help them or hurt them with what he did now. The only question was what Crafty had hidden in his quiver that could stop him. Fuktus, sure as shit. Maybe the demon wouldn't be affected by the plague. But Ursaria would. The Sixth Thunder could cut Oates down so long as he saw her retching out her royal innards first.
"Shouldn't have killed my hog."
He sent the plague at her in a torrent without his body needing to twitch a muscle. It shot forth in a twisting column of putrescence, caustic and ravenous. And Grazia Bracara stepped into the maelstrom, her spear igniting as she plunged the blade into the ground. The plague broke against the flaming spear. Hissing and smoking, the diverted fume split to flow around the queen. Oates sent it back in, coiling from behind and above. But the tongues peeled away, defying his will. Ursaria stood, untouched, wearing the barest of smiles as the sorceress miasma splayed, separating into branches that swam against the current of Oates's command to strike the queen's bulls. Grunts echoed from within their bestial helms, and the cavaleros staggered, the vapors slithering beneath the plates of their armor. Oates ceased fighting the pull. If the queen wished for him to kill more of her people, he'd oblige. It wouldn't spare her for long. But long enough. Fuchtus wasn't coming for him. Neither was the matron spear. All merely stood, tense and watchful. Why did they not try to kill him? Ursaria would be unprotected when the bulls fell. Only, they did not fall. Their bodies drank the fumes. Too late, Oates felt the plague draining from him. He tried to call it back, but the magic no longer heeded his will. The sores, the pain, the swamp in his lungs, they were torn away. The relief of their loss, the despair, toppled him. He hit the bed of damp pebbles ringing the lake, the sudden cool of their touch a terrible bliss against his face. He heard footfalls, the soft crunch of the queen's steps amid the grinding trot of the bulls. Something heavy splashed into the lake. Oates caught a glimpse of a metal bull's head rolling briefly on the water's surface before it sank. Ursaria's voice cascaded down on him. 30 years is too long to remain idle. Oates raised his head. The queen stood over him, bulls at her sides. One stood bareheaded. A ribbon of pustules ran across the face that regarded him with an easy loathing. The face of a half-orc. You were never going to catch me unprepared for what would return, Ursaria said. And now I have repossessed all the threat you ever posed. Oates snatched at the hem of her dress, but she was just out of reach. His failure provoked a breath of mirth from the queen, and a kick from the armored mongrel. The metal-plated boot took him under the jaw. Oates found himself lying on his back when the blinding pain ebbed. A pair of bulls hauled him up. They still wore their helms, but the ease with which they lifted him betrayed them for mongrels. Their breath resounded hollow within the steel snouts. Oates could hear the wet hitches in each inhalation. The same sound the Claymaster always made. Hells. Hispartha had 6 plague-bearers. And unlike the Claymaster, Quicklime, Seeper, Thrumlung, and all the rest of the original 9, these mongrels were loyal to the crown.
There ain't a word for you cunts, Oates growled.
The helmless mongrel slammed a fist into his gut so hard, Oates vomited.
Not all half-breeds need be outcasts and rebels, Ursaria said. This insistence on ruling yourselves is an aberration. It won't last another generation.
You are wrong, Alamra said.
It is you that errs if you believe your elf-blooded chieftain and her paramour will be enough to stand against me, Ursaria told her. You may have trained in the finest brothel in Tyrkania, you pretty mongrel slattern, but since my girlhood, I was taught it was my duty to guard against the return of the orcs. And your mongrel hoofs. To do otherwise would have been unwise and unforgivable. Yet that's what my half-brothers would have done. One too mad, the other too weak. Our father knew it, and so he took steps I have continued.
You murdered your court, Manrique muttered, unable to look at the queen.
You're as mad as Giron ever was.
Ursaria moved toward him, making him shrink with each stalking step.
That smatter of fools would have spent years trying to maneuver another useless cull into my marriage bed. I suffered it once. I was young, and father said it would strengthen my succession. Now, I need nothing to be strong. And I'll not be saddled with another weak and preening man to assuage the clucking fears of the baronage.
There is a war to fight, and they fret over an heir. I am queen of Hisparta, not a broodmare for the sons of simpering toads. Nor will I wed one with a will to fight, men like Duke Ernan, who would reap all the glory of battle and forge it into a weapon to supplant me. No, my mewling lackwit half-brother, no.
The court has been purged of its uselessness. The rotten vines have been cut. Those who died without issue, like that hag, the Countess of Charistios, their lands will go to the crown. The sons and daughters of the dead, too young to attend the festivities, they will know the grief and protection of their queen, with ministers and tutors to aid in the governance of their holdings. And those who were not here, too proud to attend, or too menial to merit invitation, they will be fixed in purpose in bringing a reckoning against the truculent mongrels that slew their peers with sorcery and attempted to murder their queen beneath a banner of truce. Any that do not heal to me will find the half-orc's dreaded plague escape the tourney field and can lay waste to any land within the kingdom. Hisparta is made stronger by what I have done.
Manrique was a head and a half taller than the queen, yet he recoiled from her words, her presence, choking back tears.
You helped her to do this, Alamra accused Crafty.
Truly, I did little, he replied. The wizards left in Hisparta after the incursion were able to craft the plague anew, but were unequal to the task of allowing its bearers to draw the magic out of another bearer. There, I was able to help. A secret, potent protection, surely, yet also a perfect tool to help Her Majesty shed her desultory grandees. But not if it were unleashed by her own personal guard. I humbly suggested a cat's paw in the original plague. Truly, arranging its return was the greater challenge. Fortunate that stalwart Oates was so desirous of its removal from the boy that he would risk journey here in pursuit of peace.
And what did you gain? Alamra spat. Enough prattle, Ursariah said. The tumult caused by the thrice blood must be calmed. The peasants will have carried word to the city, but we dare not let the panic run rampant long. The tale must spread, but not chaos.
She looked to her bulls and gestured at Oates.
Bring him, and the frailing slut. The people will need to see these bastards have been cowed. As for you,
she returned her attention to Manrique, forcing a sobbing breath past his lips.
Go back to your goats and your dwarves. Utter word of what transpired here, and I'll skin every one of your animals and carpet the throne room with their hides.
Blubbering, Manrique nodded. They left him there, alone, in that false wood. The bulls ushered Oates down the forest path, supporting his stumbling steps. He didn't have the fight left for 6 naked frails, much less these steel-clad mongrel fucks.
I'm sorry, Rue, he said, though he could not look behind to see her.
You have nothing to ask pardon for, Oates.
It was a kindness, but he didn't reckon that was true. Leaving the wood, Oates caught a glimpse of the tourney field and the lonely fallen lump near its center. Sorrow flooded his mouth, burst the banks of his eyes. He'd no more rage left, only tears. The bulls led them around the top of the wood before turning west toward the river. 4 horses awaited them near a humble wooden bridge, held by 12 men-at-arms with poorly concealed bewilderment on their faces. The wood blocked their view of the tourney grounds, but they must have heard the commotion, wondered what was amiss, yet kept to their duty of keeping the royal steeds. A trio of heralds were among the men, already sitting their mares. Ursariah bid them ride to the city to proclaim her safety and the capture of the Lotland's mongrels. The heralds spurred away over the bridge, their course momentarily puzzling Oates, until he remembered the Furiosa, the queen's private entrance into Majirit. The northern gate, though closer, would be mobbed with the folk fleeing the tourney. The messengers could cross the river here, ride quickly south, and cross again at the Furiosa with none to impede their progress. Oates and Alamra were put in chains while the queen and Ingrazia Bracara mounted. There were animals for Crafty and Fuctus as well.
Such foresight, Alamra said, her words cutting at the wizard.
They set off over the small bridge and turned south, following the messenger's path beside the Korismano. Oats and Alamra walked surrounded by the queen's bulls. At the fore rode Ursaria and the matron's spear, the men-at-arms marching at the rear. Crafty and Fuktus were just outside the encircling bulls to the left, closer to the river. The going was slow. Oats could do little more than hobble. Open fields stood before them on both sides of the river, dotted here and there by stands of trees and the crofts of shepherds. Majirit sprawled upon its hills in the distance, the bulk of the queen's citadel bulging over the walls above the river.
"I cannot see it."
Alamra's soft words drew Oates's attention. He looked over to find her staring at the ground before her feet, brow creased.
"See what?" he asked.
"The gain," she whispered. "For Uhat."
"He fucked us. We knew he would. Not the how or when, but we knew."
Alamra met his eyes.
"And the why?"
Oates lifted his gaze to the wizard.
"He's crafty."
"I cannot see it," Alamra said again, her voice filled with vexation.
At last, the city loomed to their left. Ahead, the Furiosa spanned the river, its stone arch anchored at both ends by formidable square towers. Oates could see men moving atop the tower standing on the west bank. A trail led out of its brother on the opposing side, winding up to a barbican jutting from the walls. Oates wasn't looking forward to that climb, though he reckoned whatever awaited him within the queen's fortress would be a heap more unpleasant.
"You see any way of saving yourself, you take it," he told Alamra. "Do what they want. Say what they want. Chief'll need you alive."
The portcullis in the first tower was already raised. Four men with halberds stood guard at the entrance, kneeling as the queen passed. Oates limped through the cool shadows of the tower gate, finding another four men on the bridge side. The heavy grate lowered behind them. Oates grit his teeth against the steady slope of the arching bridge.
"Here, I think, Fuktus," Crafty said,
reining his horse to a stop at the crest. Fuktus dismounted. The bulls eyed him, but did not stop, herding Oates and Alamra on, the rear guard of halberdiers following. They had left the wizard and his demon behind several paces before the matron spear turned in the saddle to notice the Tyrkanian was no longer moving with the entourage. She spoke a word to her queen, and Ursaria stopped, bringing the bulls and the men-at-arms to a halt. The queen half-turned her horse.
"We do not dally, Uhad Ulbadir."
"No, trusting queen, we do not," Crafty replied.
It was not often the wizard's voice shed its silky tone.
"We, as the hoof riders say, must palaver."
"At my pleasure," Ursaria said. "Not yours."
"A royal prerogative, one which you have lost without knowing."
"Tread carefully, Tyrkanian."
Crafty's smile appeared, but it was not gloating or joyous. It was tired.
"I have, for long years, which is why I can now say that today, Ursaria Trastorius, today is the end of your reign."
The queen's crooked mouth twisted with confusion. She transformed it into a sneer.
"Take them!"
The 12 men of the rear guard leveled their halberds. Crafty and Fuktus did not flinch. The men-at-arms moved toward them in two ranks, while the queen's bulls formed up to block the bridge. Fuktus watched the men come, axe held low across his thighs. Movement upon the tower at the Javadi's back drew Oates's eye. Stirred by the building confrontation below, the men stationed at the top trained their stockbows, the eight halberdiers guarding the portcullis taking slow steps to support their fellows on the bridge. Crafty and Fuktus were unmindful of the danger, their attentions fixed on the queen and her retinue.
More movement pulled Oates's gaze higher, into the sky above. He grunted, the grunt tumbling into a chuckle, which grew again to laughter. Alamra gave him a quizzical stare.
"I always offered to sneak ahead," he told her, and shook his head. "She tried to tell me when we parted."
Alamra's eyes narrowed, not understanding.
"Stealing the persimmons from the orphanage larder," Oates said, his smile growing. "I'd offer to go first in case my mother found us. But Jackal and Fetch would never hear of it."
Oates turned his smile on Crafty.
"We always went in together."
The wizard winked. The roke dove from the clouds, its shadow stretching over the bridge. The bull's horses reared, the men-at-arms recoiled, crying out in alarm. Several fell upon their asses. But the swooping beast wasn't coming for them. It struck the top of the tower behind Crafty, massive wings beating over the parapet as it slowed to unleash its talons upon the stock bowman. The queen mastered her horse.
"What is this?"
she demanded, furious eyes fixed on the tower.
"This, trusting queen, is dread fetching," Crafty said, without alarm.
The chief appeared between the merlins atop the tower, kataras in hand, the roke savaging the screaming garrison behind her. A man stumbled into the tower passage beneath, expelled from the inner door, trying to hold his guts in, followed by a familiar, swaggering silhouette.
"Oh, and friend Jackal," Crafty said.
Jack came charging out of the shadows as Fetching leaped from the tower. They struck the portcullis guards at the same instant, he cutting down two on the run, she landing on a third, knives plunging into the sides of his neck.
"At them!"
the queen shouted at her guard. The 12 men leveled their halberds. Fetch and Jackal did not slow. They tore through the portcullis guards, darting past Crafty and Fuchtus to meet the blanching dozen, every flash of their blades crippling or killing. The chief struck with enough force to send several men flying from the bridge. While the lowly frails died, the queen's bulls strode forth. The plague steamed from their bodies, the vapors languid for a moment, before coalescing and flooding over the bridge. The few men-at-arms remaining loosed shrieks as their flesh began to bubble, their weapons and bodies dropping to the stones. The fetid cloud washed over Jackal and Fetch, causing them both to expel snarls of pain. Jack's flesh began to erupt, the blessings of Atukan banishing the sores, only to have them return. Outwardly, Fetch was unaffected. But after three labored steps, she stumbled, her breath a jagged wheeze. Jackal reached her side, helped her stand, and they kept coming. But they made it only another few steps before the vile magic left them gasping. Oates gathered his chains. The matron spear could skewer him in the back, but he wouldn't stand by and watch. If they were to die, let them die together. He took a step, intent on looping the iron links around the helmless plague bearer's neck, but Alamra grabbed his arm.
"Oates, wait!"
Unwilling to be deterred, he tore away from her hand, but his next step was also halted. Not by Rue's hand, or a spear in the back, but by what he beheld. The queen's bulls were trembling, the fumes roiling back to them. The plates of their armor rattling with furious convulsions, they dropped their